The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
I'm delighted to be joined by the one and only Ardal O'Hanlon, who has released a brand new book, A Plot to Die For, which I have my hand on here. Ardal, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Claire. Thanks.
Lovely
for having
to see you. First of all, condolences on your recent bereavement. You lost your dad in the last couple
That's
of weeks.
That's right, yes.
How are you doing? Because it's funny, as much as you think you might be ready for it, it always hits you hard, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think, it does. It hasn't really sunk in yet, really, even though he'd been, I suppose, suffering for quite a few months beforehand. And, you know, you think, yes, as you say, you think you're absolutely mentally prepared for this. And, you know, you think after, like, he'd lived for a very long time. He lived to 92 years old. And so, yes, and of course, I think I'm very grown up and very sensible and, you know, very practical and everything. But, yeah, it takes a little time to sink in, yeah.
Yeah, it changes your perspective, I think, a little on the world when your father goes.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, I suppose, like, for the first time in your life, you're not a little boy anymore. I find that very strange. Mm-hmm. Your relationship with your father is so profound and so complicated. And, you know, like, with the best will in the world, even though, you know, we would discuss a lot of things and, you know, have a very deep, you know, arguments about lots of issues. I suppose there's always this sense that I'm still his son. I'm his boy. You know, I still have this kind of childish reverence towards him. Do you know what I mean? That you wouldn't maybe have towards another human being.
And your cheerleader, your supporter, that's who your parent is. You know, when you have a good relationship, and then when that person is gone, oh, that's destabilizing at the very least.
Yeah, it's so peculiar. I mean, right up to, you know, recent. I mean, I would have always turned to him for advice and stuff like that, how to deal with anything. But yeah, you always, it's funny, like, I just, you know, fathers and sons, you always feel like a boy in the presence of your father. And now, for the first time, I'm not a boy anymore.
You have to grow up.
I do have to grow up, finally.
So the book, A Plot to Die For, when I saw, is it on the back or the front or somewhere, this is a series of three, I thought, well, he has great confidence, doesn't he?
My publisher has a lot more confidence than I have.
Have you written three books?
No. I mean, I've written three novels to date.
Like, but in this, is my first proper series, you haven't...
Yeah, well, I've started the second of this series. Mm-hmm. So it was always planned that this would be part of a series. So we come up with the team of amateur detectives, one of whom's a celebrity gardener who has returned from afar. This is Finn O'Leary. He's returned from England after a reasonably successful career on British TV and radio. And he comes back to ostensibly to look after his elderly mother or to help with her care.
Who doesn't need him at all, really, because she has a great carer.
She has a fabulous carer called Happiness, who's a formidable person who doesn't take kindly to Finn, actually.
Hates him.
So immediately he's running up against this antagonist. But between Finn, his mother, and her carer, and this other fabulous character called Aoife, who's a local school teacher, they end up solving crimes for reasons that become apparent. The local people won't speak to the gardaí.
And when I was reading about Finn and all of the gardening stuff, and he's going around talking about the plants that he sees and the colours that I thought, oh, Ardal must be into gardening. And then I read the disclaimer at the back in the acknowledgements. You're not at all.
Not really. I suppose the reason I kind of picked a character like a celebrity gardener was, I mean, this is kind of uncomfortable to talk about, but like, he's not a million miles away from me.
I got that.
And I think you just, like, as a writer, I think that's what you do. You create these degrees of separation between yourself and your characters. You know, it also gives you plausible deniability as well. So the character is loosely based on me, I suppose. I mean, you know, my mother, I'm sure she won't mind me saying this out loud, she had a bad fall a few years ago, and she was in recovery for quite a long time. And, you know, we were very worried about her. So myself and my brothers and sisters, we spent a lot of time with her and got to know her very well in a way that we hadn't maybe previously, or certainly I hadn't, got to know her as a person, actually, as a woman rather than...
As an adult person, as opposed to a mammy.
Yeah, exactly, as a mammy. And so that was very rewarding. And, you know, it was around that time that I was thinking, it's time I wrote a crime novel.
As you do.
And so, you know, she inspired me hugely in terms of the type of novel it was. It is quite gentle compared to my two previous novels, which are very dark and twisted.
Yes.
and almost nihilistic. Like I frighten myself sometimes when I look over my previous novels. Did I really write that? And so this is kind of more fun, and I think it's got thrills as well.
Well, it's very funny. Does it help you scratch the stand-up itch in a way, writing in that style?
You definitely bring the stand-up sensibility to bear on it. You know, like as a stand-up comedian, you know, your job is to be very compelling. You have to hold the audience's attention. So, you know, if you like, I try and bring that into the novel writing. You think, am I boring the audience? Am I boring the readership yet? You know, and so you kind of keep it moving and and keep them entertained. Like, you know, you read so many novels that are po-faced and, you know, like I don't like comedy novels per se, but I don't like novels that aren't funny, you know.
So just going back to the similarities between you and Finn, when you went back to help out at home when your mother had the fall, did you find that people were going, oh, there he is now, our most famous son, and were you deeply uncomfortable with that?
See, there's an element of that. Like that. So one of the themes in the book is very much that sort of notion of fame and celebrity. Like, it's interesting. Some people in small towns are very impressed with celebrity. Equally, people are very unimpressed with your celebrity.
And they'll do everything not to say it to you.
They will go out of your way to show how unimpressed they are. But the interesting thing from the point of view of the character of Finn is that people will confide in him. And I find this. Now,
what, people tell you secrets?
Yes. I can't tell you. People will stop me on the street or in the park if I'm walking the dog and they will talk to me and they will confide in them. Maybe it's just I've got such an angelic face.
I would say they probably feel they know you.
Yeah.
Because your face is familiar to them. Now, you do have that kind of a face as well, don't you? That you tell things to.
Well, I don't know, but I really don't know why that is. But I certainly found that people would people will tell me, like, really, you know, deep secrets. Like, they will tell me stuff that they probably shouldn't tell me. So
this is amazing. Yeah. Does this happen like on a regular basis?
Yeah, I mean, like I mean, maybe not suitable for morning radio, but I remember being at a party and someone telling me about the murder they committed.
What?
Yes, yes, in real life.
Well, what do you do with that information?
Well, I mean, you try and get away from them would be the first instinct. But after a while, you kind of listen and you go, well, this obviously happened. I knew it had happened. And, you know, and you kind of go, okay, interesting. And,
incredible. You know, that's a moral dilemma. I mean,
it is a little bit of a moral dilemma. Oh, I mean, the guy had served time. Don't get me wrong. I mean,
okay. So, no, okay.
It wasn't that. But it's just that, you know, we had a very long discussion about, you know, motivation and so on, and why,
it's incredible,
and the mechanics of it and the fallout of it and the time in jail. And so that's just an example of the kind of thing. And most people aren't telling me about the murders they committed.
But deep and meaningful things. Maybe they think you're a priest.
Well, there's that as well, maybe. I don't know. But either way, I find that that's a thing that I was able to use for this novel, for this, like, you know, he was probably best known, this character that I'm writing about, Finn, he was probably best known for a quite confessional gardening show. Like I'm sure, you know, particularly in talk radio, I think a lot of people are ringing up because they're quite lonely. So they're ringing up ostensibly to talk about an issue or a thing. So let's say this guy has a gardening program on Radio 4 on Sunday mornings. People are ringing up. But in his experience, he finds that people aren't actually talking about, like, the mange mite or whatever it is. They're actually talking about their husband who died 6 months ago. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, they're building that connection.
He always had that ability to listen.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure Finn out, because he seems to reject a lot of the celebrity stuff, and he's so awkward at the Tidy Towns meeting, you know, when people go, we have Finn with us now and he's going to do a great job on the town and all of the rest. But at the same time, he's done those sort of panel shows in London, and he enjoyed them, and he knows that his father is outraged by the fact that he would do that as a gardener, that he's not being honourable to his craft.
Yeah.
So he's split, isn't it? How he's torn.
Like so many people, like, you know, people have principles until they break them. You know what I mean? I think that's true of a lot of people. People are consistent until they aren't. You know, until they're put in a new situation that they haven't experienced before. And I think there's always this kind of push and pull, like, in the media. Like, you know, as a writer, as a stand-up comedian, as an actor, like, they're the things that you love doing. You love doing the actual job, the process, the relationships you build, the learning, the technique, you know, the performance and all of that. Everything else that goes on around that is sort of, it's kind of like pushed on you. You kind of go along with it, but there's this constant push and pull, you know, like I do have my red lines, you know.
The things that you won't.
That I won't do. Like I won't probably do reality shows. I won't do Help, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Things like that. You know, I just would find that that's probably too out there.
I was thinking about you at the weekend because I watched a couple of episodes of Last One Laughing, the UK version, where I don't know if you've seen it, but Bob Mortimer
really
is in it.
Funny, yeah.
It is really funny. And I was wondering whether that would be something that you would do. It is a reality program, but you have to be a really good comedian to be on it.
Yeah, I think that's different because that is like you are using your skill set as a comedian. I think that's slightly different. Mm-hmm. Things like Taskmaster are different.
Because they're niche, aren't they?
They're comedy shows rather than reality shows.
And I think you'd be good at it because I think you'd be good at making people laugh but not laughing yourself.
Oh, well, that's very kind.
I'm recommending that you do it.
All right. I'll
when you take
Claire,
a break
no
from the writing.
Yeah.
So tell me then, I mean, if we have people asking here, are you going to do any stand-up? Are you planning European cities? Like, they're mad for you to go on a tour again.
Yeah.
Is that gone because you're doing
the writing? Well,
I've
just finished the tour. So I did a fairly extensive tour, 70 dates over the autumn and into the spring. So I've toured every place I could possibly play in England and Scotland and Wales and Ireland and... You know, so I've kind of got that out of my system to some degree.
And how long does the break have to be before you can go back out and do that again?
Well, it's another few years.
Is it?
Yeah. Like the last time I would have toured was 2019, 2020, just before COVID happened. And then like this is sort of all the tour I've just done is all the stuff that I've sort of gathered in the meantime. Mm-hmm. So it would take me 3 or 4 years, yeah.
Do you like it?
Love it. Absolutely. I loved it more than ever this time, strangely.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't quite know why that is.
Yeah, I was going to ask you why that was. Is it because I'd imagine the audiences are changing a bit, or are they? Is it still the same?
They're still very supportive. I mean, they're changing to some extent because a lot of people are coming from different, like a lot of the really successful comedians now are coming from podcasting and coming from sort of online comedy and stuff like that. So there's a whole new audience being generated for comedy. But I find like, you know, like I'm very long in the tooth now as a comedian. Like I've been doing it for 30 odd years. But I find the audiences are as good as ever, if not better than ever, very supportive. They come out in good numbers. I'm enjoying it. Maybe it's confidence as you get older, get more confident in your own abilities, but also in your own kind of like what you want to say.
Yeah. And has the style changed at all for you? Because sometimes you see trends coming and going in comedy. Well, a lot of that sort of comes from the American side of things, I think. But is it the same as it always was in terms of what the audience is looking for?
Well, I think that, like, yeah, I don't really know. I've always kind of stuck to my guns, you know, sort of trying to craft good jokes with little surreal flourishes. I think relatability is always really important. You know, you have to have your finger on the pulse as a comedian. You know, you're always trying to not second guess the audience, but you're always trying to hit the nail on the head, to say that thing that everyone else thinks.
Yes.
And that you have, because you've sat down and you've thought about it a lot, you articulate. So it's a public service.
A few seconds before it comes to the audience that you manage to get in there, but you're on their train of thought, right? Is Dougal a millstone or do you still like the Dougal thing?
I don't really think about it or dwell on it at all. Mm. Like it's like it was a great thing to be part of.
But it's so long ago now, you know. And even this morning when we were saying that you were coming on, we're playing clips of it. I think, I wonder how you feel about this. Do you know what I mean? Having done all the stuff you've done between then and now, there he is.
Yeah, but I'm really proud to be. I'm really proud of it. That's the main thing. At different times, I thought it might have been a bit of a millstone.
Yeah, I'm more than this guy.
Yeah, but like, that's fine. You're not. You can't control how people think about you. You know what I mean? Like, every day of my life is a new day, and I'm just trying to get by and trying to, you know, okay, I'm trying to write a novel this week or this month or this year, or you know, I'm trying to do my stand up show or whatever, or, you know, doing an acting job or something. Like, it's, and, you know, I love the variety. I love the uncertain nature of it, the roller coaster nature
like
of it,
that?
The nomadic nature of it.
Some people just couldn't cope with that. Like, you know that,
no,
probably
I
from
love
your
it.
Friends and your family, that it's just, it would be really difficult for a lot of people to deal with freelancing, full stop.
Yeah. No, I absolutely love it. I love that. I love, like, you know, the semblance of control you have, like, over your own life, I suppose, that you're not, you know, you're no one's slave, I suppose. You're master of your own destiny to some extent. Mm-hmm. You know, you're still relying on people offering you jobs and
well,
so
that's
on.
The thing. Like, it's grand while you're going well. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. If you're in a fallow patch and you have mouths to feed at home, it's not as much fun.
Yeah, it's not. And like, and then world events intervene from time to time. So like, you know, for example, during the financial crash during COVID, and now during the uncertainty with the, you know, the sort of whimsical, unpredictable and very destructive, you know, president of America, you know, where you are left very, very uncertain, you know, as a human being, you know, we don't know what's around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
You mentioned President Trump, and I know you've been very forthright in your views. And I read an interview with you, I think it was in Hot Press in 2025. So now that we've seen what's happening, as you mentioned there, in Iran, we heard this morning that our costs here in terms of our household costs could be impacted until 2028 at least, even if the war ends tomorrow. It's extraordinary, isn't it, to think that one man's whim can cause so yeah. much destruction, death in one part of the world, yeah. but also impact our lives so profoundly here.
Yeah, yeah, that's why it defies belief. You know, I do talk about it in my stand-up show a little bit, but at the same time, I don't want to be that guy pontificating about things like this. But I mean, yes, it has real, real impacts on us here.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, yeah.
What do you think of the Pope taking a stance, to a certain extent, against him? Like, it's really unusual for that to happen. Has it ever happened before that a Pope has taken on someone like Donald Trump?
I don't think so. I think it's very, very brave of him, and I mean, I think he's I think he's brilliant. Yeah, I mean, I love the Pope. Fair play to him. I mean, I suppose he is a person who has a certain authority to to do that. You know, I'm always wary, just like from the point of view of a, you know, being a comedian, being a writer, being an actor. You know, like where you're better known for other things, where you start kind of, I suppose, pontificating, for want of a better word, about global issues. Whereas someone like the Pope has this genuine authority, probably almost more than any other figure in the world to do this. Like, he stands outside politics in some ways. So yeah, I think he's a really important figure. You mm-hmm. know,
but you know, we're all entitled to have our view, and I think it's really important that our creatives have views on these things too.
Yeah, I mean, like, I agree with you. Like, but you, I think you have to ask yourself the question always is, like, you know, what's the point here? What's the purpose? Why are you getting involved in this particular issue at this particular time? And is your contribution meaningful? Is it making a difference in any way?
Mm-hmm.
I always feel that, like, you know, like if you are, let's say, if you are on Instagram and you're putting out like little comedy clips of yourself every, you know, every day, and then suddenly you put out a clip of yourself, you know, talking about the genocide in Israel, you know, which we're all appalled by, obviously. That's jarring, I think. And it's weird. It's a little bit odd.
Possibly, yeah. Possibly.
Yeah.
I see where you're getting at.
So I think, like,
but plenty of people have done that, you know, haven't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, I know.
They've taken a stance. And for some people, it hasn't played very well for them with the audience that they have been chasing or targeting, you know. So it can be a brave decision.
Yeah, I think it can be. It can be. But I just think it needs to be consistent, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're styling yourself as an activist, I think you have to be all in to some extent.
Yeah.
You know, this is why we elect politicians, you know, people who you know, who in an ideal world or in theory are supposed to be representing you and supposed to be articulating the views of the public.
That life never appealed to you, no?
It never appealed to me, really, no. I mean,
you probably saw enough
but I think
of
you
it,
can be, I think,
it
you be I think you'd be subtle in your comedy and in your writing. Like, if you have something meaningful to say, or if you feel that you have an important contribution to make, if you feel really passionate about something. I think you can do that in a more long form way than firing off little tweets and Instagram posts. I honestly believe so. I think it's you know, in some senses it's brave, but in some senses it's just going with the flow as well. You know, like make a documentary, write a book. You know, my last novel was set in the border region. It was about the fallout from the peace process and stuff like that. It was something I thought about for years and years and years, something that I really believe passionately in, something that I felt a little bit authoritative about. And I just feel that if you're going to get involved in politics as a creative or, you know, as an artist, you know, it would want to be something that you're incredibly passionate about, so don't, and authoritative about.
Don't dip your toe in reverse back out again.
That's what I'm trying to say, yeah. Is just this kind of like, yeah, absolutely. It's a little bit dilettantish, I think.
Listen, someone says, this is really nice. I'm going through a really tough time at the moment. Ardell's voice just makes me smile and I feel safe listening to you. Thank you. Okay. Isn't that lovely? That person's going to confess to a murder now to you if you meet them on the street. Yeah. Ardell, thanks so much for coming in. The book is called A Plot to Die For. The first of three in the series. We're going to hold you to that now. That's what your publisher said.
10 years time with the third one.
It's out now. Ardell O'Hanlon, A Plot to Die For, Small Town Ireland, Big Time Murder. It's a great read. I'm enjoying it so much. Ardell, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Claire.
We'll take a break. Back after this.
The Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.